Hello, I hope you're all enjoying this series and the topics that we are exploring. Feel free to ask any questions that you have about parenting and behavior management of children with special needs by calling in and leaving a recording of your question. I'll be happy to address them in the order that they arrive to me. So just to recap, so far we've discussed the chicken-egg-chicken question of what comes first, behavior or emotions. We've discussed how to manage doctors' predictions. We've also discussed INB and SWC, adolescents and preemies. Today's question is a bit of a different nature, and the caller asked this question from the depth of the pain in her heart. She said as follows, if the parent herself knows that her weakest point is structure, persistence, and consistency. But even if I know it, she said, I'm already on site, I'm already on the job, and I'm already seeing the mess, both figuratively and otherwise. And it takes a lot of energy to work on behaviors and expectations of myself being the co-head of the household and at the same time working on my children. My question is, for my family's success, where should I invest the bulk of my energy? On myself or on my children? What will be more beneficial to my family? Excellent question. So as I usually do, I gave this question quite a bit of thought because it deserves a deep and thorough answer. So let's break down the question and see how we can answer it. On a superficial level, the elementary level of the question is, if I was created by our Eibishter with difficulty in a specific skill set, and that skill set is necessary for functional life or health on whatever level, am I mechuyev to work on that skill? And if so, how? Some people are created naturally skinny, and some people are not. Some people are created naturally giving, and some people are not. Some people are created naturally friendly and outgoing, and some people are not. And some people are created naturally consistent, and some people are not. No matter what the skill set is, the rule is that if that skill set is necessary in order to accomplish the reason why the Ribbono Shel Olam placed you on this planet, then one is required to work consistently on that skill set for the entire time that that skill set is required. Now, here's the mistake we make. We look around us at people who are better than we are at what they do, and we assume that they were born with this skill set in place and that it was a natural gift that Hashem gave them. We assume that all our gedolim were born with brilliant heads and are never distracted. We assume that all skinny people are naturally skinny and that they eat whatever they want and get away with it. We assume that every Rav who gets up to give a drasha in front of a huge or not so huge audience is not nervous before or during the drasha. We assume that the singers that sing on our CDs or on stage were born with perfect voices and never had to work on it or are never nervous to perform. We also assume that people who are consistent, persistent, and structured are naturally that way. Although sometimes this is true, there are some people who can eat whatever they want. There are some people who are fearless in front of crowds. There are some people who can learn 16 hours a day and never need to take breaks. And there are some people who are naturally structured and organized. For the most part, mainstream humanity is not that way. Adam la'amo yulad. A person was created to fight entropy. What is entropy? Entropy is actually a scientific term that describes how much easier it is in this world for things to be random than for them to be organized. For example, it takes one blow on a piece of glass for it to shatter into thousands of pieces, but it takes a village to glue those pieces back together, if it were even possible, and make it back into one piece again. Another example, if you dropped one drop of food coloring into a glass of water, it would take a second for it to spread all over the water. But if you had a cup of water with food coloring already spread into it, it would not be possible to reverse the process and get it back to one drop. Here's another. It is so easy to spill your coffee, but next to impossible to wipe up the coffee in such a way that it is back in your cup the way it was. Things fall on the floor, they don't jump back up into our hands. It's so much easier to make a mess than to clean it up. Okay, enough, you get the idea. This is how the Ribbono Shel Olam made this world. It's so easy to do an Avera, it's not so easy to do the mitzvos or to refrain from Averos. Adam la'amal yulad. A person was born to work and not to let their lives slide into their random natural tendencies. And along come our secular counterparts who share this planet with us, and they say, easier said than done. That's a secular expression, and it's one of the most apikarsisha expressions I have ever heard. And so it's easier to talk about it than to do it? So does that justify not doing it? Since when? What does one thing have to do with the other? And maybe, just maybe, if I talk about it enough, the concept will go into my brain and I'll have an easier time doing it. And I'll have an easier time growing. Maybe I need to go to the nutritionist once a week and talk about what I should eat or not eat in order to work on my weight, which doesn't come naturally to me. Or maybe I need to go to the public speaking coach who will teach me the skills of public speaking by talking to me about what I should or shouldn't be doing when I get up to speak in public. Or maybe, just maybe, I need to force myself out of my comfort zone to give away my guest room to someone who needs it when my neighbor does it so naturally and so happily. And yes, talking about it does help as long as the conversation takes place in 72-hour mode. For those of you who are familiar with my Are Your Hands Full program for children who are behaving typically, the 72-hour mode conversation is the only time that we use language to influence behaviors. The 72-hour mode is a time when a parent gets a chance to talk to a child at a separate time, not when the misbehavior is happening, in order to teach him or her about a specific concept. The 72-hour mode conversation is very effective because it doesn't take place at the time of the misbehavior. Rather, it takes place at a time when both the parent and child are calm and relaxed and can communicate appropriately. The same idea should exist in your mind whenever someone says to you, easier said than done. First, remember, the best place to start is by talking about it. And through 72-hour mode style discussions with either a professional, coach, or just a friend, the actions that you must take in order to make changes will become much more reachable than before. You should also remember that Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba Betrunya Lifnei Briyosav. Hashem doesn't ever place a person in a position where they cannot overcome their challenge. So if Hashem put you on the job site, as our caller so eloquently called it, then there's a way to overcome. Let's figure out how. So first, let's examine the words that our caller used. Amazing words. Structured, persistent, consistent. Really, all of them stem from the same skill. Namely, the ability to do the same thing every time a particular stimulus is presented. And the truth is that the ability to do the same thing every time a stimulus is presented is an extremely necessary ingredient every time a person wants to take on a new Kabbalah in order to grow. So, for example, if I decide that I want to take it upon myself to say the Tehillim of the day every morning after davening, then every time I get to Aleinu, then a structured brain that got used to the schedule would consistently continue on to Tehillim after davening. Or if I take it upon myself to bench from a bencher from now on, then every time my brain finishes eating a meal that I washed for, it would focus immediately on getting the bencher in order to bench. Or every time my hamper became filled, I would get a signal in my brain that it's time to do laundry, and I would follow that signal. This level of structure is usually a result of conditioning over time, which is the foundation upon which all training and growth is based. So some people's brains are programmed to easily do the same thing at a regular and steady pace without deviating from how the brain is supposed to respond to each stimulus. But some people get distracted. This distraction is what causes people to do different things every time a stimulus is presented, thereby sabotaging consistency. And once consistency is sabotaged, getting back on the wagon of being consistent is even harder. So the best and only way to work on consistency is to focus on the concept of same. Same, same, same. And even though some people, especially the very creative and artistic and musical ones, view same as boring, really the boring aspect of structure is the necessary cement that will hold your home together. So now let's get back to our caller's question. She knows she has to work somewhere. She wasn't asking if she should be working on consistency. She knows she has to. She was asking, where should I start? Should I start on myself or should I work on my children? Interestingly enough, her assumption was that she can't work on both at once. Well, guess what, my friends? You absolutely can work on both at once. Because whatever you accomplish with yourself will be observed by your children and they will benefit from it. And the rule is that anything you try to teach your children, you must have first mastered it yourself, because you cannot teach what you're not. Here are some examples of what I mean. You cannot teach your children not to lie if you are not honest, right? You cannot teach your children to be on time if you are not punctual. Sure. You cannot teach your children to remain calm in the face of frustrating moments unless you're able to do the same. And so the list goes on. So if you take it upon yourself to work on one or two items at a time on yourself, your children will learn from you, because children don't do what we say, they do what we do. Everybody knows this. Now, any goal that you're going to work on yourself needs to be worked for 40 days. The 40 days, as we said in a previous lecture, is the smallest amount of time that it takes to make a change. For those of you who have difficulty with consistency, the 40-day thing is going to be extremely difficult. I know. Doesn't mean it's impossible, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it. The best way to work on the 40 days is with a planner or a calendar, a visual. Make sure to mark off each day as you master it. Reward yourself. Watch the numbers go up, and you will be fascinated by what a fantastic feeling it is when you arrive at the number 40. I had two personal experiences with 40 days, which made a huge change in my life. The first one was when I couldn't get myself to do exercise. I literally hated it. It was so boring. I would do anything and everything else, anything to push it off. And then one day I decided to try the 40-day thing with exercise. I took it upon myself to do exercise every day. It wasn't a perfect 40 days because of Shabbos, but it was close enough for 40 days. And I kept going. And the first 10 days were miserable. And somehow, as I hit closer to 20 days, I began to notice that my body started wanting it. And literally, when I hit the 40-day mark, I couldn't even manage to skip a day anymore. I didn't want to anymore. It was almost like I trained my body to need it. Which, by the way, it always did need it. I just wasn't aware of it. This is what Hergel Nase Teva means. When you do something beregilus, it becomes your nature. And to this day, I exercise every day. And it's a sad day for me when I miss it. I feel the vacuum. Here's another interesting story about 40 days that happened to me, but this one has a ruchniistic touch to it. Many years ago, I decided at one point to say Shir HaShirim every day as a schus for a shidduch for one of my kids. The shidduch situation with that kid wasn't a massive emergency. She wasn't that old, but I felt I wanted to do it anyway, so I started. Let me tell you, Shir HaShirim has a bunch of prakim, and it took me a good half hour to say it every day. It was hard. It was a sacrifice of time in my crazy schedule, but I was happy to do it. So I moved forward and got to day 28. That's 4 weeks. Never missed a word, never missed a letter, never missed a perek. And then on day 29, I forgot. And that night I remembered and I was devastated. What do I do? I had worked so hard to say Shir HaShirim for 28 straight days. And now what? I have to start counting again? Nah, I reasoned. They're not going to make me start again. But sure enough, when I called my Rav the next morning, he said to me, start again. Why not? And so I did. Day one, day two, day three. It was devastating. I almost felt like I was back in school, like I was being punished for forgetting. But I pushed myself forward and I kept on moving because A, I knew it wasn't a punishment. And B, I knew it was a test and I was going to pass it. I got to day 28, all good. You can be sure I did not forget day 29. I used a calendar and I marked it off every day. Day 30, day 31, day 32, day 33. It was getting closer. I made sure to say Shir HaShirim the first thing in the morning. I was petrified I was going to forget. There was no such thing as a distraction and no such thing as pushing it off. Day 34, day 35, day 36, I kept moving forward, moving toward the home stretch, 37, 38, 39. And the morning of the 40th day, I got up with such vim and vigor, I flew out of bed, dressed, davened straight to the Shir HaShirim. Whew, it was done. An hour later, you guessed it, an hour later, the phone rang. You guessed it again. A shatran. The boy that we had wanted for her, they gave a yes. I hung up the phone and I plopped onto my couch. I was literally paralyzed. I looked up and I said to the Rabban Shalom, so you knew 69 days ago that today was going to be the day. Of course you did. So I had to forget on day 29. So this could stretch to the extra days to make it 69 days instead of 40? I guess so. And you can guess the rest. This couple now, Kanai Nahara, have 8 children, and they just made bar mitzvah number 2 this past week. So that's my experience with 40 days. So now that we've established that one must work on ourselves first, we should at least address the skill sets to work on that will positively impact our children the most. Since I'm not familiar with our caller's exact status, I'll start from the very beginning. What are the absolutely 100% necessary items that a parent must provide for children? Here's a very beginning or partial list. Number 1, frustration tolerance, not to shout, not to hit, or become otherwise abusive. The only exception for this is if chas v'chalila safety is being compromised to the degree that someone involved would need intervention by Hatzalah. Number 2, nurture through food. One warm or hot cooked meal per day. The warmth of cooked food that is prepared by a parent makes a child feel safe, loved, and cared for. Number 3, a clean environment. Children need to trust you and to know that they can rely on you for their basic needs. This means that clean clothing should be readily available for them every day, and they should know that they can rely on you to have their knapsacks and lunches packed up and will follow through whatever their school or teacher or principal requires. No, your house doesn't have to be a museum, but it needs to run. Number 4, bedtime. Closure to the day with expressions of love go a long way in making a child feel safe at bedtime. On the same note, bedtime needs to be structured so that the child masters the skill of separating from parents, which is an important prerequisite for the purpose of sleep. Now, I know most of you can think of many other must-dos that children need, but I'll tell you that if parents are not screaming and shouting and using any type of corporal punishment on their children, if they are preparing one cooked meal for them per day, if the house basically runs and children consistently have clean clothing and other supplies available, and if parents do a bedtime, then you've gotten somewhere. You and your children are on the right track. If not, then each of these four items should be worked on individually, usually with a coach. Any goal that a parent takes on, let's say cooking supper every day, and by the way, it doesn't have to be a cook from scratch, gourmet, five-course meal, a simple meal will do as well, should be taken on for one day at a time until you reach 40 days. Once the home is running in a 40-plus day of consistency for these four things, that is when most people can begin the hands-full program for children's behavior management. The reason I listed four things first is that your children have to feel safe and loved before you can start the program, at least on the level of the bare minimum. For those of you who have read the Are Your Hands Full books or listened to the Are Your Hands Full audios, there are many other items included in the actual program which enhance a child's safety, trust, and feelings of being loved and cared for. But the four basic ones that I listed are a wonderful place to start. I hope this answers questions. And remember, you might mess up on day 29, but Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam. You simply pick yourself up and start counting again. No big deal. You will get to the light at the end of the tunnel. You'll see. Have a great week.